Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Oh, gee, what a shame.
Okay, it's five. We can get going.
Sounds good!
Yep.
All right.
We've got a lot to pack into this hour, so.
Yep. All right. Hey, welcome to the Organized Play Q&A. Because it's Q&A, we're going to largely let you do the steering, but first let's get some introductions. Hi, I'm John Compton. I'm the Organized Play lead developer.
Hi, John.
I have a problem.
Tanya Wooldridge, Organized Play Coordinator.
Hi, John.
Oh, right, you say hi to her.
Hi, Mommy.
She's my boss.
Thurston Hillman, Starfinder Society developer, and... Yes, I really have a problem.
And we will soon have Linda Zayas-Palmer, who is a Pathfinder Society developer. All right, so just to catch you up to speed, at last night's banquet, we announced that Season 9 is the Year of Faction's Favor. And we've talked about how the factions have been a big part of Organized Play program for a long, long time. We've been setting in motion a whole bunch of different storylines and plot threads and goals for them. This is a year when we're going to see a lot of those start to pay off. And by start to pay off, I mean even conclude paying off in big ways. We also announced Starfinder Society has its first year called the Year of Scoured Stars. And that we said that in Starfinder Society... basically from the get-go, we know that something recently happened that was very, very bad for the Starfinder Society. They sent out an expedition with a whole... Basically, they ran a multi-table interactive special.
Thank you.
And they got hit by a meteor or something.
Everyone died.
So basically, what if everybody playing at Gen Con had their characters killed immediately and we had to piece things back together?
So the campaign starts in media res?
to a degree, and the first special, 1-00, helps to provide a little bit of that prologue. So these are some of the things that are known in a general sense going into this panel, in case that informs some of your questions. Yeah.
So if I got into season 1-01, but not 00, what can I do? Gen Con.
Absolutely everything. So, like John alluded to, 01-00 acts more as a prologue. It utilizes pre-generated characters, so it is meant for people who are running Pathfinder Society a lot right now and probably want to introduce people, but let's not go through the, like, making character all of that. Let's start off with a big special where we can just provide some pre-gens, give you a story that really sets up everything, but is not immediately essential to getting in. 01-01, the commencement, even based on the name, is kind of like the confirmation, in that it is more of a proper introduction to what Starfinder Society is all about. And that will allow you to use your characters, highly encourages it, introduces our factions, and it is a more traditional starting point. The special sort of serves a couple of roles, and again, one of those is we understand a lot of Pathfinder Society people are going to be interested. They might not want to make that full leap, so it's something that we can run as a special and with just pre-gens.
Speaking a little bit to the Gen Con organization, so those of you that had looked at the catalog saw that our quest pack was what we were offering in the first two slots. The idea being, we know the store's not going to open until after the Sagamore Ballroom opened, so the whole first two slots were nothing but pre-gens. Introduction to the mechanics and the game. The quests are built to introduce that game quickly, especially for you organizers that are going to take this back in a couple of days after Gen Con. The quests introduce the game mechanics and some of the differences there. The special introduces the world, and then the commencement introduces the society. So it's a three-step introduction piece to get you off and running. But that also means you don't need to have your own character until Friday morning at Gen Con. So Thursday night, we'll see all of you at 2 a.m. in one of the spare tables, writing some paperwork.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is all of that going to be available for stores that want to run stuff Gen Con weekend? Because I know our store, we're not going to be able to send in. No one's going to want to go to Gen Con just because of the distance and time. So is that all going to be available so we can do something Gen Con weekend? I know you and I...
The scenarios will be available. The PDF of the core rulebook will come out as soon as we drop the subscriptions. So if you are a subscriber, you'll have the access to that PDF core rulebook to look at that as well.
Yeah, we're taking special steps to make sure that our Gen Con GMs have everything that they need to make sure that we have as big and explosive of a release as possible Gen Con. But even that takes steps because we are providing them the PDF a little bit earlier. And that's not something that we can do on a huge scale.
But you will have the scenarios in your downloads that Thursday, as soon as everything launches out.
24 hours, I can do it.
Yes.
Is this the season that we get to finally see Liberty's Edge get a competent leader that isn't a corrupt criminal?
So for a long time, Major Coulson Maldris has been associated with some sketchy decisions. And this is a known quantity to us. When it comes to Season 9 is going to be awesome for factions because for many of them, it's a point at which all their hard work pays off. For some of them, it's a point where they can really examine what it is that they're about and decide whether they need to course correct to meet certain goals. And that could be in terms of their philosophy as shaped by some of our reporting sheets. It could be a matter of leadership.
Yeah.
So it was introduced that this season would also have a tie-in, and the words, for the first time, to an AP. But obviously we know it's not the first time that it's been associated with an AP because of season 4 and 5. What does that mean?
Okay, so when we look at things like seasons 3 through 5, these were ones where, and admittedly, part of these decisions were before I was part of Paizo, but I kind of relay them, is that we looked at the AP is the flagship line, and they sort of helped to determine what some of the supplemental materials are that are coming out. And so when there's all of this extra material that can provide us new storylines, the Pathfinder Society oftentimes sort of jumped on that ship and sort of rode along. But it wasn't shaping a part of the story. For example, Season 3 has, by and large, nothing to do with Jade Regent. Season 4, you know, Shattered Star is lovely, but Season 4 takes a different direction that is still very Varisian and Thassalonian, but different. Season 5, okay, these are a little bit closer. We're all fighting kind of the same war, but we're doing it from different fronts and for different reasons. When Crystal and I were working on the pitch for War for the Crown, we were looking at how to make sure that not only would they be similar themes, but that certain events in Pathfinder Society would be showing up as peripheral or background or even supplemental instances within the AP storyline itself, and how the AP storyline would in turn influence the Society scenarios. So if you think about when it's starting, when War for the Crown is starting, that's February 2018, which is about 7 months into Season 9. So expect to see some really cool adventures leading up to then that'll help to provide some of the basis. So it's been a really awesome partnership in that regard.
So, but things we do in the adventures won't necessarily impact how the AP is written.
The adventures themselves are going to be setting up a huge amount of the framework for the AP happening in the first place.
We have always responded to what the AP was doing. This time, Pathfinder Society gets to lead in, prologue, and drive some of the storyline that's going to show up in that AP.
And on top of that, it's more and more the developers have been talking to each other and talking to us about what it is that Pathfinder Society Organized Play has been accomplishing, and mining that for ideas for to lead forward with adventures, to look at campaign settings that we publish. And so you'll see more and more often that scenario concepts and accomplishments are showing up as canonical accomplishments in the setting.
Certain stuff in these mascots.
Sure.
And to sort of build off what John said, because we had the AP panel earlier today, so I can say I'm writing the first one, and I have had to reference the Pathfinder Society field guide a good amount for some things, and yeah, PFS players will, I think, be happy with what is showing up.
And they announce all the authors?
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm writing number 5.
Hence the integration that we know we can have given the team and who's working on it.
It's going to be awesome.
That's why I said first
Squee.
Time. Squee.
In the back.
So for those players like myself who don't really engage much with the existing factions in the MS, what is the draw for us with Season 9?
So a lot of the factions increasingly have represented philosophies within the Pathfinder Society and extensions of the Pathfinder Society. For example, the Silver Crusade isn't a totally separate organization. It is a let's use the Society's resources to do good. So you'll find that with a lot of these, in fact, the vast majority of these adventures, that the Pathfinder Society has its own reason for doing these things or for helping out in this situation. But a faction leader or some sort of faction opportunity has been the hook that brings it to the attention of the Society in the first place as an opportunity. It's basically, hey, I have new work opportunities because you've been so good to me, we'll bring you into this and everybody can scratch each other's backs. So there will be plenty of good Pathfinder Society core ideas in there.
So I know for me the Scarab Sage is by far my favorite faction.
Okay.
But like my buddy Andrew at home, he's getting really turned off with the faction stuff because it seems like throughout all the scenarios, the only big push we've done is Scarab Sage stuff over and over. While everything else has been hit or miss, one scenario here, a couple here, but never really any long developed story for him.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to change with any of the others besides Talvor?
Yes. The short answer is yes. We looked at everything. Some of them are a little more than others, but we looked at all of them because we know that there's different people who want different faction lines.
Yeah, and a lot of it has been like, even looking at some of the factions, like, okay, these guys have been gathering these things, these resources, these connections, but for what? So this is a big time for us to say, for this. So each of the factions is having some form of storyline along those lines. And if you like the Scarab Sages, have you been playing the Adventure Card Guild?
Yes.
Good.
Trust me, ask Tanya, I keep up on Scarab Sage.
Fantastic. Awesome. Your Plundered Tombs has a lot of Scarab Sages continuity. Purple.
So I listened to the No Direction podcast, and I just read your blog about Starfinder factions. Is some of that influencing this year of the factions for PFS as well? Are we going to see some tighter integration? I see looks.
The issue with integrating anything into PFS is we're on our 10th year. And if we make a change and it's not a great change, it's going to have some repercussions that we don't know of yet. So we're playing around with Starfinder and that it's its inaugural year, and we have that flexibility. If that works, we are constantly reevaluating what we may or may not want to bring over into Pathfinder Society. But at this point in time, we're keeping the experiments to the Starfinder.
I'm the test bed.
And even when we do have good changes, even those come with repercussions in implementation.
Yeah.
So there's so much more opportunity when we have something that we can build from the ground up.
Yes. And you will see more and more different things that as we talk about it. And there's Alinda.
Hi!
Yay, Alinda!
Yay! I was just wrapping up one of my games.
Yay!
One of the nice things we have is this group of developers and me. I just realized developer, and me. So, you know, one of these things is not like the other. We work really tightly together, and we talk a lot about where we want to see things go. So a lot of our meetings aren't Starfinder Society or Pathfinder Society. They're what's best for organized play, and then where do we push that, and how do we look at it. So you're going to see a lot of things come back and forth with that one. I don't think any of our programs, even ACG, live in a vacuum.
No.
They're all intermingled, integrated now.
Thank you.
Question. Going back to Starfinder 1-00, will there be any special requirements for running that outside conventions, or is it just convention only?
No special requirements anywhere.
Okay.
Again, we want that to be the flagship of bringing Pathfinder people into Starfinder, again, without the, hey, we have to sit down and make new characters, all of that. This is a quick introduction. Great for game days and things like that, where maybe you just want to slot that one big special in to get everyone who has good knowledge of the game and might not be as interested in the baseline quests.
And it'll be available right after GenCon.
Yep.
Yes. The lady here in the middle has been having her hand up for a while.
I'm just curious, how are faction journal cards going to work in season 9?
So, she actually asked me this question yesterday, and then I was like, ask it again at the Q&A so that I can tell everybody. We are still going, so you may have heard, you know, or you did hear about the Year of Factions favor, and that we're going to be having some more things going on with the factions this year. We're not getting rid of the faction journal cards.
We will, however, be re-examining them to make sure that we're updating them so that each one of them can have a few more things that tie into the current season, as we've done with past seasons.
Yes,
so
they're staying.
Yep.
Yes. They're still an option if you wish to use them.
Green shirt over there.
Given that the Starfinder scenarios for Gen Con sold out almost instantly, is there a plan to add more of those?
There is. One of the things I'll do is, from here until about a week before Gen Con, I will constantly pull numbers, see where we're selling, see where we're not, talk to Bob because he's my schedule guru, see where he can move people. We actually have a wait list on volunteers for running Starfinder, which we didn't know if we'd have that. We were like, oh, are we going to be pulling teeth, or are we going to have... So we can make that adjustment. I don't want to say when those adjustments will be made. The best thing I can say is just keep watching that website.
As an organizer, especially looking forward to the fact that Starfinder Society is going to be producing content much slower than Pathfinder Society, and that we don't have a huge backlog to draw from. Mm-hmm. Advice?
So one thing first on that is the structure for the season. John and I sat down for quite a bit and went through to make sure that someone can play a character from the start up until whatever the potential maximum character level is, and they can play everything as it comes out. So that will be important. But that doesn't account for people who want to try new stuff or something bad happens to them in space and they fall in trash compactor and die, and they need a new character. So we are trying to focus a lot on releasing new content. So you'll see a lot of low-level scenarios that come out. But really, to start, we're taking it slow, much like with what happened with Gen Con. We aren't jumping in with two scenarios a month. We want to make sure that that one scenario is getting played and getting played a lot. So as an organizer, to help with that is, to make sure that people are playing it and that con is going through. Now, to help also with that is, we are looking from the get-go of sanctioning the adventure path.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. And
that was announced in March.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's something we want to make sure we have, basically, as they come out, if we can. But
the third piece is, we are still looking at our 2018 budget and allocation and resource allocation, and this is something we're talking to the executives about on a pretty frequent basis. If we spin up to two, and when we would spin up to two, it is not a no, it's not a yes, it's we need to look at the numbers, and we need to see the demand.
Excuse me. I know in the past there's been open call for freelancers to write Pathfinder scenarios. is there still such a way, and what would be your recommendation for writing your first one?
So the current state of the open call is that it is on a bit of a hiatus. It's partly was imposed by when we updated the website, we took all of, there used to be a get involved page that had both how to become a venture captain and how to do the open call. We turned that into a coordinator's page, and the open call stuff sort of disappeared and was lost in the translation. But that was a bit of a boon because I've been behind on going through the open calls and providing meaningful feedback to people, so it's not just, you sure did spend time on this? No. I want people to learn from this process so they can continue to improve. So I'm reticent to push for that until I can get through that backlog, and I don't have an exact timeline for it. As far as how to make the most of it once that point does come along is look at what we have created, especially recently, and look for stylistic elements. Have somebody read through what you have written before you send it in. Look at how we format things. Consider that the quest that was part of the open call is ideally something that can be played in an hour. So if you've crammed in three encounters, then not only is that going to be hard to play in that time, but you've also spent all that time on three sets of stat blocks when you could have told me a story. So don't try and cram it so full of amazing Wahoo things that it's a mishmash of different ideas. Make something cohesive and engaging that will impress me or whoever else helps me review these guys.
Are we gonna be? Can we during this Q&A get an insight for the Starfinder Society guide, or is it gonna have to wait until it comes out?
Okay, guide timelines. Yes.
This has been my life.
I know.
This book has been my life.
We'll acknowledge up front that I wanted to do 8.2 right after for the Pathfinder Society, right after it launched and had some issues with it, and due to some other things that needed to get done first, it never got done. So scrapped 8.2 and moved right on to 9, which is in its final input and ready to go to edit stage. It is our goal to have that out as a preview to the venture officers so they can get a look at it at first little bit of July. Starfinder will be coming right after that. It is our goal that people get the look at both of them.
Before you start telling the public about what's
going on? Before we tell the public, we are hoping to get the venture officers to be able to look at it, vet it, catch the holes in it. And then
I appreciate
back,
that.
Give them
the venture officers, but
which would mean, if we work on this timeline, it would mean we would need that feedback on a very quick turnaround.
Fix that one
because we would put it to the public. We put it to the public at the end of July, so we would be releasing it approximately 2 to 3 weeks before Gen Con, so that everyone can see the changes that are in it, absorb the changes that are in it, and not have to try and read it that Wednesday before, you know, as you're prepping everything.
At 2 a.m. when you're making your Starfinder
character. So that is kind of our goal with it, is to have both of them out and to have them. The Starfinder guide is based on the Pathfinder Society guide. It is the same format. It's got the player section, the GM section, the organizer section, the appendices, with the updates to the rules.
I still haven't figured out how to read it yet.
So.
It's 7 years of the old stuff.
See, I gotta keep you on your toes.
You mentioned that in Starfinder Society you're making changes to the way equipment is acquired by characters.
Yes.
We have
the Delves. They talk about equipment a bit in there, so I think we can give a little bit of info on that. So equipment in Starfinder is radically different. In fact, you'll find that basically every item has an item level associated with it. So that opens up a lot of really, really appealing potentials for organized play because it gives us some benchmarks on, hey, we're not going to put the level 18 item on the level 1 Chronicle. It gives us some good numbers to play with. For how we want to assign equipment, one thing that John and I feel very strongly about when we talked about this was equipment should be meaningful on a Chronicle sheet. A lot of times you'll get a Chronicle sheet, you'll see, you know, +1 weapon, meh, toss, like, I can get that wherever else. So we're making it, we're looking at some systems for that right now, but what we are currently working with is the idea that things from the core rule book will be at a set purchase level, basically, like, versus your level you can purchase. Things on the Chronicle sheet will be much more easily acquired, so you can acquire them earlier. So maybe you're 5th level, but you found an 8th level gun on a Chronicle sheet, you might be able to buy that.
Okay.
You won't be able to buy the 17th level gun that you've got on your Chronicle sheet. There will be some control there. But we're looking at making Chronicle sheets really matter, and then the core rule book will be sort of that staple. And then any additional books that come out, they might be harder. They might be that, like, oh, you can only get these items equal to your level on a, like, always available basis. But if they show up on a Chronicle sheet, that means they're much cooler because you can get them earlier. So.
Speaking of Chronicle sheets and a change that's coming out, Pathfinder Society has a change on their Chronicle sheets this year.
Are we going to go ahead and implement that one now?
Yes.
Yeah. John's confused.
Yeah. John's unsure.
He's still confused.
Sounds good. Well, I remember that.
Do you remember this conversation, John?
Oh, I remember that conversation.
Okay, you're still on board with it?
Sure.
Okay. This is how we get decisions made.
Yeah. We appreciate the pressure you offer.
I love this. It's like we had this conversation, John's like, what about the current sheets? So one of the things that we've been discussing is like one of the questions is like, okay, well, in the lower sub-tier, you have this treasure that's printed, and the higher sub-tier is like, well, you include everything from the lower sub-tier, except maybe not if it's consumable and there's a different number or whatever. So one of the things we've been looking into doing for the Chronicle Sheets is putting a lot more clarity between that, what you get, so that you can just look at it and be like, yes, this is what we have that's available for my
Make the equipment section a little more clear.
So the equipment will either be available at the lower tier or the high tier, but you'll get one column of equipment, not pieces of both. Yeah, so it's a small change, but it's trying to clarify some of the questions that we get on the boards.
Hence my confusion, because when you introduced this, it was going to be like, yeah, we're getting rid of sub-tiers, like 5, 6.
Oh, yeah, gone! Boom!
And I was like, oh, jeez, what do we decide?
It's laser
I saw the John panic, so it's like, if it's just this long, we
Speaking of some changes on some sheets, another thing that you're going to see this year on our boon sheets, we have revamped them a little bit. One of the things is there is a line that says this is not worth any cash value.
What?
Oh, good. Some of you in the room, you will understand why we have to do this. There has been some question on whether boons were tradable for money or for other items, not just changing cert for cert. The other thing that we're putting on there is instead of the gold area, because you don't need the chart of gold, a trade column. So we're asking that from here on out, if you organize for us, to please put the person that earns that boon's number on the top of it. If they want to trade it, they can fill in one of the trade columns on the side.
Nice. Okay.
Keep track of it. See where they're going. We have limited the stamps and some of the other pieces last year, but unfortunately, some of the real-world implementation of the boon program has meant that we need to take some of these measures on security. So they're going to be on there this year.
So kind of going back to the faction thing, are with the storyline in the Season 9 being largely faction-related, are we going to see either a culmination or a revisiting of the Secret Shadow War?
Well, the thing is that the Shadow War was a Shadow War for Absalom, for control of Absalom. Which really put all the factions into direct contest with one another. The factions have since evolved into, again, more of an expression of different viewpoints within the society that are, you know, might not always agree with each other, but are still under the same umbrella of cooperation. So doing the Shadow War would no longer be fitting, at least not within the society of the Pathfinder Society.
What you would expect more to see is if you think about some of those unanswered questions, some of those like, well, maybe when is this going to happen type questions that start to build up with the factions over the years, that would be what we're going to be looking to explore. We're going to be looking to give each faction a chance to shine through. We've come up with, or just, a lot of it's been John. But we've discussed this. Mm-hmm. But cool plans for every single one of the factions to be able to explore something new or to revisit something that we've been tossing around for a while. It would be a really cool idea.
Hillary?
Okay.
So we've got these storylines that are coming for the two factions, and we've talked a lot about how our reporting boxes matter, how you go through that. So with the storyline of Season 9, will our actions have consequences for the fate of some of those factions?
It's a matter of tense. There are both things that will be happening in the future for whose reporting is valuable. There are also things that have been set in motion based on the past 3-4 years of reporting data that is also deciding part of Season 9.
An interesting situation where John and I are like, well, let's see, I think maybe we're going to go with this thing, and then people might have done that, right? And we looked at the reporting data, and it was the opposite of what we thought. We're like, oh, we're not going there, I guess. Okay, opposite thing, here we go. This is what we're doing, new plot.
But there are a lot of moments where it's like, okay, we're hoping that they were okay people here, and a lot of the times, kudos, Pathfinder Society, you were good people. There's at least one instance where you were a bunch of jackals. And needless to say, we're excited to revisit that storyline.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing quite like rubbing it in the face of the role-playing guild when they show up to another place and they're like, oh, hey, you, right, our table helped you out. Yeah, everybody else threw me under the bus. By the way, I'm the new villain.
It's great stuff.
How tightly integrated is Starfinder Season 1 with EAP?
So, we are not integrated with EAP. And one of the great things we can do with Starfinder Society is Galaxy is a big place, and we can go off to basically any area we want and create what we want. But one thing that was very important to me when I came on board was I wanted to make sure that what we are doing in Starfinder Society is part of this universe. And so when we did our season kind of overview and pitch, we made sure that James Sutter was there as the creative director for Starfinder, and he was involved with the season that we are doing, and you know, came to us with feedback. We kind of went back and forth, but the season that we are doing will be entirely independent, just because we also want to show off Starfinder, and unlike Pathfinder, which has a lot of products behind it now, we're starting off a bit slower with Starfinder with the product releases. So Starfinder Society is going to be the big vector to get a lot of information about the setting out. So much like the original Pathfinder Society seasons, we're going to try to jump all over the place to show things off, but still have a cohesive story.
So, something else that's relevant with this is that the Dead Sun's adventure path does begin with you joining the Starfinder Society. So this first adventure path, can't say if it's going to be the ongoing trend, makes it really easy for you to participate in Dead Sun's under the auspices of the Organized Play program.
Something to note when they were doing the preview at the banquet, they noted factions. Mm-hmm. The factions in the book are not the factions in society. It's the same term, but it is not the same. So if you were getting there seeing the Hell Knights and going, ah!
Yeah. Let's make sure we're getting some people who have not already asked questions.
Well, something about the card game actually, okay. the banquet, when it came up and said it's going to be the same season as the RPG Guild. So, what's since we're not coming out with a new base set, and we're not for a while now, revamping that, what base set or sets?
We are using Mummy's Mask.
Okay.
But it will go outside the realm of Asiren this time. Yeah. We are using those locations to approximate places all over Galarian.
So, kind of a follow-up to the gentleman in the front, talking about different locations.
Yes.
And we've got this integration in Season 9 with the Adventure Path, which is focused primarily on Tal'Nor, is my understanding. Will that limit or reduce the opportunities for scenarios, PFS scenarios, outside, I mean, TN or Garund or other cool places that we don't see very often?
The answer to that is hell no! We have all sorts of great plans all over Galarian. It's going to be fantastic. but yeah, we have storylines that touch upon Tien Sha. We have storylines that touch upon Western Garund. We have 7 different factions, all of them with interests and means of throwing their weight around all across the globe, and after Season 8, even beyond.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps returns to the planets?
Could very well be, but similar to how after Season 3 we sort of took a vacation from Tien Sha, and how we've really been given the world wound some space ever since Season 5, we'll probably let the elemental planes lie for a little bit until we return to them.
Yeah, I mean, there's that whole Runes of Hazlet thing between now and then, too.
Yep, exactly.
You mentioned factions for Starfinder earlier. Can you tell us more about those?
We sure can.
Diggity-dare.
Oh, I was waiting for this one. who wants to hear about some factions that we haven't announced yet? Hey. Yeah. One of the good things about having the banquet and sort of announcing our new season is and giving you some background of that this terrible Scoured Stars incident has occurred with the Starfinder Society meant that we could talk a bit more about some of the factions that are actually tied into it, because factions in Starfinder Society, some of them are entirely new and are a direct result of, oh dang, the multi-table interactive failed and all the players are gone, and some of the players formed a little union in the corner and said, we're making our own faction. what we are seeing is two new factions that we'll announce here. And the first one really ties in with that pre-gen special, 01-00, Claim to Salvation. And they are called the Acquisitives. And these are, when the Starfinder Society underwent some dark, dark times after the Scoured Star incident, they had to turn to hiring mercenaries to maintain operations because they were just so depleted on staff. And some of these mercenaries quickly realized they were getting a lot of fame, a lot of reputation, a lot of money from doing Starfinder things, and they realized, no, this gig isn't bad. So the Inquisitives are a faction that is all about working within the Starfinder Society, and as a part of it, for personal fame, and for acquiring, you know, money, and a lot of things that you kind of get with some other factions, maybe in Pathfinder Society, but these are a very different breed, and I think people will really like that idea of, oh, I want to be this mercenary character, here is a faction for that.
There's a glory hounds who work within the system rather than being complete jerks.
Correct.
but they allow you to play into a little bit of that trope because, yeah, again, Starfinder Society is a great gig. They keep on giving you all these leads and be like, hey, there's a ruined ship that sure is full of really secret technology.
So they're like privateers.
A little bit, but within the auspices of the Starfinder Society and recovering, cataloging, and even disseminating information.
Yeah. So that is the first faction of the mouse. The second one is a very unique faction in our first season. They're called the Second Seekers, right? Yes.
Second Seekers.
Second Seekers. However, there is a caveat to this faction. You'll notice it shows up a lot of times as Second Seekers, and then a little bracketed text of Luazi El Sebo, who is our first seeker.
The Starfinder Society has a different structure than the Pathfinder Society as you know it. Among the several tiers of leadership is the head of the organization known as the First Seeker. And the idea is that the First Seeker is a highly respected and elected member of the Starfinder Society who is brought in to help set the overarching agenda. It's not a mandatory thing, so like if you are a Starfinder and you want to explore Akaton and continue doing things in Akaton, great. But in this case, the First Seeker comes in with some sort of grand thesis or goal, and that helps to redirect some of the efforts of the Starfinders. So the Second Seekers are people who are really dedicated to this evolving goal that is always based on whoever the Second Seeker is, or the First Seeker is. And the First Seeker only has a limited tenure in which to accomplish his or her goal before then either that person accomplishes it, ideally, steps back saying, we have made a great deal of progress toward this, but it's now time to let somebody else take control. Or even the First Seeker goes out in a blaze of glory. So, again, the Second Seekers are loyal to that First Seeker's mission.
Yes, and they are the ones who are pushing that agenda. And as I said, it comes with that caveat of Luazi El Sebo, who is our First Seeker, and who is the person who, right now, is heavily responsible for keeping the Starfinder Society together in the wake of the Scoured Stars incident. So what is important about this faction, and that we are making very clear in the guide and when this information is released, is that this is a temporary faction. And we want players to be aware of that. But it is also a faction that players can go into knowing it is temporary to push that agenda. And even when that point in our storyline is done, people can still champion that cause. They can be the people who still like, remember Luazi El Sebo? I still liked her, what she was doing, and I'm championing that.
So like the Shadow Lodge.
and with how factions are different in Starfinder Society, there's a lot of room to do that sort of stuff. And that is why with the Second Seekers we can introduce that plot.
Part of the banquet last night, it basically said that there, you know, with all the seekers basically being, you know, or all the pathfinders being destroyed in this grand special.
Starfinders.
Starfinders. sorry, that were just all killed during this great special. And we're rebuilding the Starfinder from scratch, Starfinder Society from scratch, and that the first few scenarios are going to be deciding what that means. Right? That's kind of what I heard. Does that sound right?
It's not just the first few.
No, yeah. It's
so the first
whole season.
Okay, the question is, what does that mean to me as a player who would love to see you know, if I'm running through a scenario and I was like, well, I want this to happen, mm-hmm. you know, how much agency are you going to actually give the players in that?
It is equally true in Pathfinder Society as it is in Starfinder Society that those reporting checkboxes are very important. So exactly how things are influenced on a scenario-by-scenario basis will vary on a scenario-by-scenario basis. And another thing just to be clear about, all the Seekers and high-level and multi-table interactive Starfinders are out of the picture. Their status, unknown.
Yes.
What?
Pathfinder Season 9, the playable races, are there any changes?
We are not going to be retiring any or adding any new races this season.
Will you be retiring any?
No
retirements. Not retiring or adding.
No retirements, no additions.
Way in the back on that side?
Yep.
Right.
Okay. Are you doing anything to make sure that a blank boxes A through D don't happen as often so that as an event coordinator I can look and say, you left it blank, Jim?
What he's saying is that there are some scenarios that don't have reporting boxes.
But basically a box that says no check boxes.
Yeah.
Or yes,
yeah.
Nothing to report.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is something that we can take back and probably get integrated without
mm-hmm.
too much.
So with the idea of a faction having gone out in a blaze of glory, not accomplished their goals, and kind of tying this back to Season 9 for PFS, is it going to be possible for a group of players to get to a table and say, this scenario is really contrary to what we think the society should do, and sabotage that faction's objective and have that actually be something that in reporting ends up influencing the story?
There are several adventures over the past several years that have tied in heavily to one or more factions, and they have provided opportunities to make let's say that there are three choices. A is in the faction's interest in one direction, B is in the faction's interest in another direction, and C is bleep this faction. We've been watching that data. So it's really fun, especially for the exchange faction, to provide the two different sides of the exchange. And that's a tough balance to strike in development and writing, but when we can pull it off, it's really fun. So I wouldn't expect it for every single one of them, but the more we can do it, oh man, it's really fun.
We've had a lot of fun pulling the reporting data as we've been making our plans for Season 9 and being like, okay, well, I can see two radically different scenarios that might spin off of this based off of the reporting data. Do we do this one that's way over here doing this, or do we this one doing way up here doing this based on the consequences of what people did? And it's like, all right, we're doing this one. Here we go. So it's really fun to be able to work with that and to see what, you know, what decisions really appeal to people at those big points.
So with that, would it be possible for the player base at large to forcibly retire a faction by causing so many failures in this season?
To an extent.
Which faction
are
you trying to
Great plot. I want to get rid of Great plot.
I love Dark Ark.
It's totally cool. I understand that you have this desire to completely shut down faction, and I can assure you, Shadow Lodge is not coming back. There's just not enough interest.
That might have been too soon.
So this may be way too early to ask this particular question, but I know my players are going to ask, due to the slightly more limited opportunities to play Starfinder, is the Starfinder core campaign going to be a thing starting out, or something that may come along in a few years once there's more product and support?
I don't think we have any plans for a core campaign at this point, because everything you do is a core campaign, because we only have a core rulebook. So until we have that additional set of resources and we would need to look at maybe making those choices simpler, it's not something we're planning on.
Fair enough.
But we can explore the demand for that when we do have those resources.
James?
So in the last couple of seasons, we've seen you play around with some ideas with like replayable scenarios or secret arcs and pushing to higher levels or making a replayable scenario like tier 3-4, a little higher tier. With the new season, what are your intentions with that? Is there going to be some new things or some computer ideas, interesting tidbits?
couple of our experimental adventure structures have included, the Tier 3 7 Evergreen and even the Mid-Season Quest pack. Both have gotten really great feedback so far, so both of them are currently penciled into Season 9 for us to explore.
Woo!
Further.
Glad to please!
Dungeon built off of random tables. That
what's that?
Awesome. Tome of Righteous Repose, random tables, more of that.
Good.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and one thing that's important to keep in mind, both for quest packs and for evergreens, is that those are a much heavier development load than a standard scenario, so it is wonderful when we can explore those further, but I would not expect to see, for example, 5 new evergreens in Season 9.
No.
We have to consider that, but we also know that especially if you're kind of a replayable scenario, but especially at those higher levels, that you're going to want to have those different options so that whenever you experience it, you can continue to experience it fresh in different ways, many different times. So we do certainly take that into account as well.
Oh, I'm going to let 899 speak for itself tonight, but we can talk about a couple of the Gen Con.
I was thinking about the modular structure.
Oh, the modular structure, okay. As far as what experimenting with other structures. So 899 tonight is what we're calling sort of a modular special, in so much as it is created out of several parts. So parts A, B, and C, or 1, 2, and 3 in this part, in this case. And over time, we're going to be releasing the adventure, but updating it in such that we will take out one of those pieces and add in the next piece in the storyline. So, for example, tonight you'll be able to play parts 1, 2, and 3 in what is version A. We will, about the beginning of 2018, release version B, in which we will cut out one of the earlier parts, and then we'll add part 4 onto it. One of the nice things about that is that version B will be treated as a separate special for the purposes of credit. So if you have played part A and GM'd part A, you can play part B and GM part B for credit. It also gives us something mid-season as an incentive that you can provide at your events. In case you have done what many of our events have done, which is like, hey, Gen Con happened. Hey, look, 3 new specials. Oh, it's September. When are you making more? The answer is, hey, early 2018, you'll have something new on that front. So this is also an experiment. We look forward to getting feedback of how this works out for you.
Excited to try it. When the version B and potentially version C of such a product drops, are we going to be able to get the version A so that we can catch up our GMs on what happened before?
Once version B drops, version A is done.
Will it still be?
Will you still be able to acquire it? That is something that has not yet been figured out as far as between us and our web team. There's a good chance that we might even put that in like the retired folder or something like that.
But on the second piece, the text will be updated so that if you didn't play A, you're still going to get an introduction that will give you the premise of what we took out.
For a replay on that, obviously if I play, character A and through this, and then the phase B of the same scenario comes out, normally replay, I can't replay with the same character.
They are treated as separate things, so if you want to take the same character over the course of however long this runs and play every single version with that same character, you can.
That character can experience the whole
story. So, with the Adventure Card Guild, I know that it's obviously not as popular as maybe Starfinder will be and as Pathfinder Society currently is, but are there currently any like really strong strategies or recommendations you have for promoting the card guild? We've got a ball rolling locally, and I want to make sure it's successful long term.
One of them is that this cross between the RPG and the ACG. If you want the full story of the season this year, you're going to need to play both, because there will be pieces that will not appear and vice versa. You're not going to miss out on the great storyline, but you will miss out on some of the key little bits. As we kind of alluded to earlier, if you haven't played Season of Plunder Tombs, there's a few things going down in Osirin that set up some of Season 9. You see a return of one of our favorite NPCs down there that a lot of people like to want to know what's going on with this person. So that's one of the selling points. The other big one we're trying to show is this will now be the third set of content for Mummy's Mask, box set, base set. So it's much easier to sell a product, especially at a $180 price point, when you can say, here's three seasons worth of play out of one set of cards, than it is to say, buy our box set, and then, you know, 6 months, buy another box set. So those are kind of the two big prongs I've been using to promote Card Guild. We are at our time, so we probably can squeeze in, like, two more.
Fortunately, we don't have anything after this.
Oh, we don't?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Dinner before the special.
Nobody eats food. Just
dinner and mustard.
Yep.
So, stepping back just a little bit to the subject of Evergreens, with the potential for a shakeup in the existing factions and leadership, can we already, or I guess I would like to already request on behalf of everybody, something at the beginning of Season 10 that is sort of First Steps-esque to sort of get new players into the new faction setup once all the moving and shaking begins to settle?
When it comes to familiarizing people with what some of the changes are or what some of the accomplishments are of factions, I will leave you with this, which is, why wait until Season 10?
That's a good point.
Cool.
Excellent.
Yes.
For the Adventure Card Guild, have you thought about, like, having, like, a print-on-demand, like, season pack that has specific new, like, locations and maybe monsters and barriers, but use the base set for the equipment and whatnot there, so you don't... You can use a base set, but you can have more variable.
We are talking, because we are already, we have started development on this next season,
mm-hmm.
So that we have more of it sitting in the pipeline. One of the things we're talking about between Loan Shark, Vic, myself, and John, wasn't in the earlier panel, but is going to get roped into this, is what we can do to supply these cards, and especially the proxy deck, so you don't have to use proxies for everything, and how we can use drive-through. Most effectively, we're actually talking to the owners of drive-through today. So,
do I need to show up early for this special time? I have no idea. I forgot that.
What?
6:30.
6:30.
GM's at 6:30.
GM's at 6:30.
I just have. So I know with the Emerald Spire and Thornkeep, we only have module play. And for a lot of people, they don't get the flavor and the interest of those because they feel like just flat dungeon crawls. Is it ever going to go campaign for sanctioning?
Not that I know.
Not that's on our radar.
One of the biggest draws of a campaign mode for some of these adventures, especially adventure paths, is that the sanctioned portion is only a piece of the bigger picture. For Emerald Spire, the entire thing is sanctioned. So,
except for the city and the forest in the beginning that tell why you're even in the dungeon.
And you can use, like, when you're doing, I had this experience with the 32-page modules, is you can create a little mission briefing toward the beginning to weave in the Venture Captain or weave in the Pathfinder Society, give it a little bit more context. That's fine. And so, when you're running Emerald Spire, if you want to start over in, what was it, Fort Inevitable?
Yeah.
And develop some of those relationships, that's fine.
Okay. You should, so that when they're playing Battle 1, they know, hey, look, there's somewhere to go after we get our asses handed to us.
Yeah, the only requirement is you run what is sanctioned. You can add the other pieces into it without changing them.
That's some intro material as well.
Yeah, that's great.
For the Emerald Fire, it's some knowledge checks,
and
that's quite presentable.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things is actually to grab some of those from the modules. It gives you a little piece of GM.
I will leave you with we moved our blog to Wednesdays instead of Mondays. We will be on Wednesdays now as an Orc Play blog. And with all the information we want to get out on Starfinder Society, as well as all the information we want to get out on Pathfinder Society, we are doing the split blog, at least from now until Gen Con. Whether the speed will maintain into September, October, we're not sure yet. But do come back twice on Wednesdays, because you'll get your Starfinder fix, and then you can have your Pathfinder fix.
Okay. Is there room for the ACG in the main room during the special this year, or are we somewhere else?
I still have tables for you.
Okay.
So as long as I have players at those tables, I will not let the RPG creep over you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Yep.
There will be
crashing.
Alrighty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.